Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Ken Adams, executive editor of CDC Gaming Reports, talking about his favorite subject, namely a variety of topics about gaming. Ken Adams, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
Before we get to Ken, had a very interesting email sent to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. It seems one of our listeners slightly misread the name of Donald Trump's Secretary of Treasury nominee, Steven Mnuchin, and figured it was actually Richard Munchkin. Our listener had nothing but high praise for the appointment. The last names do look quite a bit more alike than they sound, so I'm wondering, Richard, if others have commented on this as well, possibly bringing up subjects of, boy, do you have a strange career path as a cabinet nominee, or I didn't even know you were a Republican, or are you looking forward to moving to Washington, D.C.? Or, of course,
you know,
the big one is... Yeah?
No, I'm sorry. The big one is what?
Do you think kicking butt at the new National Harbor Casino would be a conflict of interest?
Oh, yeah. You know, I did start getting those emails, and in the beginning, I didn't know what they were talking about. It was amusing, but God forbid, I have no desire to do anything in politics or in Washington. Although if it would get me some sort of diplomatic immunity at National Harbor, then maybe that would be good. But.
Very good. All right. Also, check out with the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page. Within the past couple weeks, Richard has posted an interesting BBC interview with Cat Hulbert, and also an article about a poker cheating device made in China that is said to be in use in U.S. card rooms. We received another email from a listener at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com about no commission baccarat. The gimmick in this game is you only get paid half your bet when you win with a six. Anyway, he didn't know what it was worth and was just playing kind of casually. And a new dealer showed up and started playing full money on hands when he won with a six. The player didn't mention a word to either the dealer or the pit boss. Kept playing until another dealer came and started dealing correctly. He wants to know what you would have done, Richard.
Well, look, it's not the player's job to police the game or to teach the game to the dealers or the bosses. Any time that I am in a casino and I see a dealer who is dealing a game, improperly, I'm going to take advantage of it. As I say, that's not my job. And one of the things that I find really annoying is when I call them hall monitors, the kids who were in school that were in charge of the hall passes that, you give them a little bit of power and suddenly they think they run the place. Well, those same people grow up and go to casinos and sit on tables and tell the dealer, no, wait a minute, you have a straight. You shouldn't be paying that guy. And, invariably I'm betting hundreds of dollars and the guy pointing this out to the dealer is betting, $5. So, again, it's not the player's job to police the game. Let the dealers deal it. If they're doing it incompetently, that's their problem. And I see absolutely nothing wrong with taking advantage of those situations.
And presumably you would edge your bet up to the table limit for as long as this dealer was working there or whatever else, whatever you thought you could get away with.
I would certainly bet as much as I possibly thought I could get away with. Exactly right. Yeah.
And the other item is, you wouldn't have been playing it in the first place unless that you saw that dealer before you sat down.
that very well may be true, yes.
Okay, let's talk to Ken Adams. First topic we want to talk about today is Atlantic City. So, Ken, what's going on in Atlantic City, and will the casinos there survive?
You know, that's an ongoing question. Will they survive? And probably the question is really how many will survive, because even if you look at Reno and their other markets that have been decimated by competition, certainly Reno is one. It has a little broader economy, so it's a little bit. So the question is how many will survive? And that's one that is difficult to predict at this point. The competition has not stopped. It's going to continue, and the competitive pressure on Atlantic City is going to increase. And the more it increases, of course, the less those people have to spend to offset it, and the less they can do. So it's a very challenging time for Atlantic City. And they're going on 10 years of it already.
In November, there was an election, a statewide election in New Jersey, about allowing some new casinos up near the border with New York. That failed big time. Earlier this week, Governor Chris Christie called the vote by the people of New Jersey a dumb move. Do you concur?
I would be challenged to find any time when I concurred with Chris Christie. Since the hurricane, when he was standing in the waters bravely rescuing the city. Christie was a portion of Atlantic City's problem, Christie's. Revel never would have been built, and its impact on the market would never have taken place if he hadn't come in and decided he was going to rescue Atlantic City by helping Revel get built. And for the first part of his terms, he's in his second and his last, he was all, I'm going to make Atlantic City's going to be great again. And then, sometime last year, he just said, oh, I don't think that way anymore. I think we need more casinos in New Jersey. And he just switched, leaving Atlantic City somewhat in lurch. And he isn't finished. Whether or not he has enough time left in his or enough political to make any impact on the market, I don't know the answer to that. He certainly wouldn't have helped it by adding two casinos close to New York City, that's for certain.
So there's also a hope that legalized sports betting will bail out New Jersey. They've been hoping that for several years now. Do you think that's going to happen anytime in the near future?
Doesn't appear to me that it is, but I suppose it could. It doesn't appear to me that it will. However, if we look at Nevada, we have a couple days of history of sports, and it wouldn't bail out Nevada. It's not likely to bail out Atlantic City. It's a few million dollars a year. It's not, you know, they've lost, at this point, they've lost something like $3 billion worth of revenue. Sports betting doesn't generate that much.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it would be significantly more than what's bet in Nevada, but it's not going to be anywhere close to what they would need to bail out the city.
So, they're They're trying some moves in Atlantic City. Does seem more like Band-Aids when tourniquets would be more useful. Are they doing anything that's likely to work? This is arranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you can make an argument that if somebody had looked at the regulation, the limiting regulation, 15 years ago, and allowed Atlantic City casinos to develop differently, that they might have ended up with a strip. Instead of that, they ended up with 12 or 13 or 11 or 10 or 5 or 6 or whatever number they end up with as number shrinks of cookie-cutter casinos. That none of it resembles at all the dynamic energy of Las Vegas, and it's because of regulation. So there's an argument to be made that it could have made a difference. However, even if they'd done that, it still would have been having a racino in Queens, having a casino in Boston, Springfield, Baltimore, National Harbor, Washington, D.C., all the casinos in Pennsylvania, it still would have taken the majority of their business, no matter what they did. They might have ended up with Las Vegas. That's a remote possibility. I don't think a terribly strong one, but it certainly was a remote possibility. And they could have had a stronger industry and more competitive properties if they'd allowed them to do anything other than fit into a narrow regulatory space.
Could you expand on that? What regulation was it that was so inhibiting for them?
They dictated the size. They dictated the amount of space you could have to a casino. They dictated the number of slot machines that you could have of any one manufacturer. They put a pretty narrow scope on all the architectural plans. They had the gaming authorities had review and approval of architectural plans. The architectural plans had to satisfy first security needs. Can you imagine saying to Steve Wynn on the strip in Las Vegas, oh, we're not going to approve your property because we can't see that corner well enough from this corner. They dictated the number of rooms they had to have, and they didn't encourage anybody to do any growth, and they didn't.
There's also some kind of limitations on what kind of promotions they could advertise. And so you didn't see any billboards in Atlantic City saying "Lucid Slots in Town" or things like that, or "We're going to pay double on Christmas
Day."
Yeah,
they simply said that the gaming regulators had the right to see everything and to approve everything. In Nevada, we do a minimum standard. This is that you have to come up to this standard. You have to meet this standard. But we don't tell them specifically how they have to do it. We don't tell them how many supervisors they have to have in the table games area. In Atlantic City, they did. They wanted to control everything, and in fact, they were very successful. And now they're eating their own lunch, as it were.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Reno. Reno seemed to have done a very good job of reinventing itself. And finding other things besides gambling to bring revenue. And that just doesn't seem to have happened in Atlantic City at all.
Reno's larger, and it's a more of a transportation hub. And we were just plain dumb lucky with the technology change that we were in line for. Lots of technology development that wasn't any of our responsibility. We didn't engineer it. We tried. It's not that we weren't always trying to expand and diversify, but Tesla and some of that stuff. We were just lucky.
All right.
So grateful.
So at least for today's show, we're going to stick a fork in Atlantic City and shift the discussion.
That'll make somebody mad.
Shift the discussion a few hundred miles south and talk about MGM's National Harbor Casino. It's in Maryland, in sight of the Washington, D.C. It had its grand opening last week. What's the story there?
Well, we're not sure what the story is, so we won't know until we see about the first week of January. We'll see the first numbers. And it will be very interesting. It's being described as being one of the best locations possible in the country that, and will generate revenues of the equivalent. It's hard to say. Virginia's complaining, Georgia's complaining that, you know, that their money's all going to go running over to National Harbor before it's over. I think, the two successful casinos in Maryland are going to be complaining, but it could be a really, really successful casino and resort, and it's likely to shape the whole region before it's finished.
And how big are you thinking of the region? Are you thinking of the whole East Coast, or would you include Pennsylvania in that region, or Florida in that region?
Florida, possibly, because again, with Florida, we don't see anything happening, do we? It's at this rate, they're back to just arguing over the Seminole Compact, and nothing has moved forward with Miami. Had Miami moved forward, or if there looked like any hope for Miami moving forward, then I wouldn't say it goes as far as Florida. All that Pennsylvania is a small regional market for most part, those casinos. So it won't have a huge impact, but it will have an impact on the travel market, anybody who travels to other casinos. I think it's going to have, which probably includes Philadelphia in that.
And so Atlantic City for sure.
Oh, Atlantic City, yes.
Okay, now I had a discussion 6 months ago with somebody in the surveillance department at MGM who was boasting that the facial recognition at National Harbor will be state of the art. And was bragging about how good it's going to be. So I have not been out there. I don't know if that bragging is going to be realized, but this strikes me as bad news to a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, you know, I've been a very vocal about how bad facial recognition software works, that it really does not work at all, at least the old version that casinos have been using. Every surveillance person I talk to says they don't even bother with it because it just doesn't work at all. But at the same time, we know that the military has very good facial recognition software, and eventually the casinos are going to catch up. And, you know, technology moves very quickly, and eventually casinos will get facial recognition software that works. And, you know, it's a brand new casino. I can see casinos are not going to want to spend a lot of money upgrading, you know, the software they currently have. But a brand new place, I can see them putting in state-of-the-art. Now, whether it works or not, we'll see. I mean, I think we'll start getting reports pretty quickly on whether it's working or not. But it'll be hard to know, even from those reports, because right now, every time somebody gets thrown out of a casino, they think it's because of facial recognition software, when in the past, the vast, vast majority of those cases it was not. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And hey, if we have any listeners who work in surveillance at the new place, you know, drop us a line. Let us know. Is it really working?
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Ted Whiting is in charge of all the surveillance at MGM. Ted, why don't you give us a call? We'll be happy to talk for a year.
Come on the show, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure this is going to happen. Okay.
Good move, guys.
Okay, so big crowds there. Hard to get in. Traffic problems, of course. So we'll just have to wait and see, but
sounds like it's going to be a hit for the MGM Corporation.
Well, you know, it's a couple things for MGM. It's another city with this. They'll have this, Springfield, Massachusetts, and Atlantic City. They'll have the major resorts covered on their one serious competitor at this point. I think, well, the two Indian casinos in Connecticut maybe certainly have large facilities, but the one serious competitor is going to be Steve Wynn. But they're saying something that I think is very important. They're saying that MGM is not a casino company, but they're a resort company, and that you can expect them to move into a larger resort world, that some places will have casinos and some won't. And I think it's a very important part of their long-term growth strategy.
Yeah, I did see that recently, that Jim Murren had come out and said that not to think of them as a gambling company, but a resort company. So, it certainly seems that they're not focused on the gambling the way other companies are.
Well, in Vegas, when there's just so many casinos basically next door to each other, you can get competition to make the games looser or somewhat better for the players. At National Harbor, there's nobody very close. It's, Baltimore is what, 90 miles away, 100 miles away, something like that. So I would not expect good gambling conditions at all, certainly not in video poker. Would you expect good gambling conditions in table games, Richard, where there's basically no competition?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you can see that they don't care here in Vegas where there is competition. I mean, you know, the Venetian has triple zero roulette now. I mean, so, yeah, they don't care about the gambling. I mean, I mean, obviously they like to make whatever money they can on it, but they don't seem to be trying to promote it. They're focused on making their money everywhere else, like parking.
All right.
You know, you never have a losing day at parking.
Yep.
There's no volatility with parking. Nice, steady resort fees. Nice, steady, no volatility. Much
right.
easier to manage.
And, you know, I think the big loser, I think, I'm sorry, I sort of shifted the conversation to parking here, Bob, but I think the big loser in all this is going to be the rental car companies, because, you know, why rent a car between the cost of the rental car and the parking? You can rent a lot of Ubers for that money. So
don't invest in Alamo, invest in Uber and Lyft and the other car companies.
Yeah, right.
That might be the wise plan. All right. We're certainly not sticking a fork in National Harbor, but we are going to move on. Let's move on halfway around the world to Macau. Macau's the biggest gambling destination in the world. Much, much, much bigger than Las Vegas. Among other things, China recently move to cut the daily ATM withdrawals from about $1,200 US to $600 a day. Now certainly Macau likes its whales, but there's many, many, many thousands of small rollers, and cutting the ATM limit in half has got to hurt them. Would you agree, Ken?
Well, one, that was kind of misreported, because in actual fact, that's a transactional change. So per transactions, it's been cut in half. Per day, it stayed the same. They're also going to increase the reporting requirements, so people are going to have to declare how much money they're coming in with. So even if you're not trying to do the withdrawals, but you're bringing cash with you, that's going to be tighter. And what the government says is this is all to help the Macau economy stabilize. We're going to get rid of the joke we just had a moment ago about the volatility, no volatility in parking. We're going to kind of get rid of the volatility of those high numbers, and we're just going to keep growing from the bottom. And it makes sense to the Chinese, and it makes sense to the government in Macau. Whether or not it makes sense to Steve Wynn or not, I don't know the answer, but I suspect not.
Well, Steve Wynn just opened up a big place there, and MGM just opened up a big place there, and the Sands is about to open up another place.
The other way around. Sands is open.
Is it the other way
MGM
around?
MGM is going to, yeah. MGM is going to open. Sands already has.
And, you know, when they're investing $1 billion or more in these huge places, and now they have rule changes, this can't make them happy campers.
Wynn got hit about four different ways. You know, his Wynn is $2.5 billion. It's that property. And yet the rule changes are one thing, but they didn't get their table allotments that they, when they planned all this, it was before President Xi of China decided he was going to cut, going to catch all of the thieves that existed in China, the embezzlers and the whatever. And they were planning for 500 table games of high rollers. When they got close, then they found out, well, you're only going to get 150 games as an allotment. And Wynn managed to raise it by bringing, but he only did it by switching his table games. Well, that's part of what happened, but the rest of it, they haven't finished the transportation system, so he doesn't have good transportation for all his mass market people to get back and forth the property easily, and MGM has much of it kind of boarded up or blocked off from their construction. So Wynn's been hit with about a dozen different things immediately on his opening. It's still doing decent revenue, but much less than projections, and it certainly has disappointed the analysts.
What else has changed in Macau in the past year or so that makes it different than it was?
Well, the big thing, of course, is the Chinese government is not changing their policy. And they have forced the casinos to make these investments and to move to a broader market and to appeal to more people and more of a resort and less of a gambling hall. But for whatever reason, in September, and part of it was due to Wynn and Sands opening new properties, the decline in revenues have stopped, and there's been some increase. And for the first 11 days of December, it's 20% over what it was last year. They haven't seen barely any growth at all, but they haven't seen growth rate like that in 3 years. So this is just, it's 2.5 years. It's kind of stunning that this change, And there's not much else to say except that three major properties have opened and one more is going to. Studio City, the Sands, and Wynn. And Wynn, of course, says that his properties are magnets, that they grow markets, and that new people come to see a Wynn property when it opens. And it appears that he's being justified somewhat in that.
Do you think they face any real danger with these votes now in Japan? Japan is again talking about legalizing gambling. Do you think that
they voted today. They vote tomorrow in Japan, the next step. And it appears 2020 if they approve it now, that 2020 is when they expect it to be open. Yeah. Bloomberg had an interesting article or opinion piece about it, and they said that everybody is trying to get the same people, the Chinese gamblers, and every time a new casino opens, there's a limit to how many Chinese gamblers there are and how many high rollers. So, however, the Japanese have their own internal market that is huge, the pachinko market, and I read today that horse racing is several $1 billion a year industry in Japan, too. So Japan has a huge internal market that might separate it from the rest of them and who it was appealing to.
Yeah, well, their horse racing is the biggest in the world. I mean, it's three times what the U.S. horse racing is. So
yeah, that's the number I saw. It was something close to 20-some billion. I mean, it was huge. Yeah. Yeah, and the pachinko parlors are the same thing. They dwarf anything that we have in slot machines in the United States, and I don't have any numbers, but it's huge. And the rest of the jurisdictions are in some way or other trying to restrict locals and only get the Chinese, the foreign ones. And I don't think that's part of Japan's plan. I think that Japan recognizes it's a gambling. So I'm not sure which, but certainly it would have an impact on investment because Sands, MGM certainly want to go to Japan if they can get in.
Would it likely be easier for a wealthy Chinaman who lives in Beijing to go to Tokyo than Macau?
I think yes. I think yes. I think that there's less scrutiny on them. It's part of the premise in Saipan. It's part of the premise in Korea. It's part of the premise in Vietnam. It's part of the premise in the Philippines that those Chinese, whatever number of them they get, there's less scrutiny on them, and they're maybe a little bit more free in the way they spend money than they can be now in Macau.
Uh-huh. So who knows what government action the Chinese are going to take to either help this process or hinder it. It could go either way.
Yeah. I think the biggest fear for American casino operators in China is the renewal of their licenses. When the licenses come up for renewal, I think at this point there's no guarantee that they are not going to take over one or two of those properties and turn the license over to a Chinese national to operate. They have some legal basis. They can say that you violated the law by accepting the wages from these people who were embezzling. You have not met the standard for several other things. There's a couple of legal conditions they could do, and I think that's a possibility. And that is for Macau and the American operators in Macau, I think that's the biggest fear on the horizon.
So even though Wynn invested over $1 billion in a few years...
Oh, at this point, Wynn's got about $6 billion, I think, invested in Macau. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He has to get his license renewed.
That's
a big gamble.
That might put a dump on his stock market price, I guess.
Yeah, I would think.
And when do those licenses come up for renewal?
They start, I think, in 2020. Maybe the first one, 2022, I think, is when it gets serious.
But if it was really that all uncertain, these big companies wouldn't have made these huge investments, would they? That's part of due diligence.
You can't do due diligence on a non-transparent government. So the due diligence they did was 10 years ago when the conditions were entirely different and there was no hint that China was going to change its policies towards Macau or become more difficult for the operators. There was no hint of it. There are more than a few hints today.
Well, politically, the Chinese do not seem to be enamored with the incoming administration. Will that have ramifications in Macau? Would you speculate?
You know, I can't tell because the editorials, if you look at the editorials in like the Chinese People's Daily and some of the English language, they all are very, very clear that incoming President Trump is treading on very thin ice. But whether or not that would have any implications for Macau, I don't see any direct connection. So I wouldn't think so, but I wouldn't guarantee it either.
Okay. Very good. So I'm going to take a brief break for some commercials. We were talking to Ken Adams, who works for CDC Gaming Reports. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Until Christmas Eve, December 24th, you can pay for virtually everything at the South Point for half price using your points. Points do not have to be earned in December, just spent. This is a promotion that has run for many years, and many players accumulate points all year long just so they can use them during this interval. There will be 2x points Christmas Day on video poker, midnight to midnight, no limits. The next semester of free video poker classes will begin January 25th. These are Wednesday afternoons beginning at noon. The complete schedule is at bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Peek and Play Poker. This is a 7 coins per line game, where in addition to being dealt the normal 5 cards, you also see the first card that you're going to get on the draw. A certain amount of strategy deviations are obvious, such as not holding 4 cards to a flush, if you know the first card off the pack is not going to be the same suit. Or if you're dealt Jack-Jack 6-6-3, where the first card is going to be a 5, you hold the jacks by themselves rather than 2 pair, which you would hold in the normal game. Several other plays you'll need to create your own software to analyze. Okay, not too far from Macau is Saipan. They're having casinos there. Ken, have you heard anything about that?
At the moment, they're calling it a temporary casino. That the real one is going to open next year sometime. It's going to be a full-fledged casino. Various descriptions have this as an upgraded laundromat that's doing enrolling chip turnover. It's doing like what Macau used to do. It's huge numbers. It's doing $3 billion a month or something like that in rolling chip turnover. And Nobody. And the board of directors of it is very interesting because they're all high-powered ex-governors, ex-regulators from the United States. There are a lot of big names on the board, but nobody has any more detail, but I haven't seen any, of what it actually is and where the customers are coming from and how they're managing to do this. So it's a phenomenon
that's
developing.
Yeah, one of the things I found, well, a number of things I found pretty amazing about this. There's an ex-CIA head on the board. There's an ex FBI, people from both the DNC and the GOP. But the one thing I found amazing was the amount of revenue was staggering. I think it was the most anywhere in the world. And the head of the casino, who used to work for one of the Trump casinos in Atlantic City, I think, said that he believes that Macau must be underreporting their revenue because he's making so much and can't see how they could possibly be doing less. Makes me want to go to Saipan just to see what's just to see what they have.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon, and it's for certain the story has not completely been told yet, and I have no idea what that's going to mean. It certainly indicates your earlier question on whether or not a rich Chinese businessman from Beijing would feel more comfortable in some places than others, particularly more comfortable someplace other than Macau. That apparently is certainly true in Saipan. But what that exactly means, I don't know.
Well, yeah. But Beijing and Saipan are 2,500 miles apart. I mean, that's a long airplane ride, or, well, 4 or 5 hours.
Well, but it's closer than Manila or Singapore. Right, and how far is Beijing from Macau?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but it's not that far for sure. I'm looking at a map, but I don't have time to figure out the distances, so I don't know the answer. But I don't think that's irrelevant.
I'm at my computer.
Anyway, it doesn't. I don't think it matters. I mean, if the guy in Beijing wants to gamble, he's going to pick the place where he feels he'll get the least hassles, right?
Yeah, half as many miles. It's 1235 from Beijing to Macau. And but of course, once you get on an airplane, the difference between a 2-hour flight and a 4-hour flight perhaps isn't that much. All right, we've been talking to Ken Adams from cdcgamingreports.com. Richard, how do people get in contact with us?
We welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can put them on our Facebook page at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can sign up for the show to get it delivered to you automatically every week at gamblingwithanedge.com or iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. And to find an archive of every episode, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
Thank you, Ken Adams. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.